To hold stop, reel 3.
You were talking just now about the customs of the Navy. Were you able to retain a complete naval atmosphere, although nobody had ever been in the Navy and you were surrounded by the Army?
Yes, we did. Yeah, we contained ourselves Navy fashion completely, entirely separate from the Army and all its disciplines. In fact, we ignored the Red Caps. Not that we ever offended, but they just ignored us entirely, being Navy. But there again, we used naval expressions such as, where's Brown? Said, oh, he's gone to the head, which meant he's gone to the lavatory. We'd use naval expressions of that kind. And the salute was entirely different. You know, his salute was over the right eyebrow. And instead of being the Army / Guards show-off salute, it was an ordinary, simple naval salute over the right eyebrow. Things of that sort. But we never had any disciplinary action or no disciplinary courts for the old man to try at all. Of course, by the way, the CO is always the old man. He never had to try any disciplinary offences at all, although we used to have fights. I was involved in one or two. If you get 70 or 80 men together, you can't agree all the time, and you resort to fisticuffs, I suppose, being due to not enough work and too much food or something. I don't know. But we used to get several fights, and we used to bet on the results sometimes. One man was a champion from the City of London Police Force. The athletic man, big muscles. And he was thrashed by a Royal Marine middleweight. But we didn't know until afterward, but the middleweight, he was a champion too. So we watched a fight between two chefs, and each was proud of his prowess, but the little man beat the big one. So things of that sort. But it was never brought to a court-martial, or nothing happened unduly. Nothing happened in the way of discipline with regard to fights at all. But Army rum, of course, in the stone jars with the basket work round them, they were Army issue, but we regarded them as naval issue, and that was Navy, and we had our Navy issue of rum, and all our discipline, like we called them, go on guard. We always went on watches. We had watches, and some amusing things happened on the watches. One man, he was a gypsy type, and he was a very good company, very dark hair, dark skin. I would say he was a gypsy, and he got fed up one morning on guard at the camp at Leparidae, and the starlings were whistling and chirping away from the treetops, being a lovely sunny morning. He got fed up with the noise of this bird, chirp, chirp, chirp. So he got so angry, so he said, he raised his rifle and killed this starling, chortling away at the top of the tree. And, of course, that turned the camp at immediate evacuation. The lot of us grabbed our rifles. They're here, sort of thing, invasion. It was him firing off one round of alarm to kill this poor, wretched starling. So the old man said, as the CO said, well, he said, with pyjamas over his coat and bareheaded, he said, Mitchell, he said, I'm a good mind to make you eat that, he said. If you do, he said, no action. So Mitchell looked at this bird lying there in its blood and feathers and gory nonsense, and it was repulsive to all our horrors. He simply ate it and started with the beak head upwards. He simply ate it raw and spat out. Watched it and said, OK. He said, forget it. And we all went back. But he did eat it. That's the sort of type of man you had to deal with. The mixed company we were in. Some were well-educated. Some two or three varsity men there. And they quote Plato and all sorts of things, you know, which Dutch to us, but they could talk Latin, which we couldn't. But as a mixed company, we were quite a well-behaved, rowdy crowd. I would say a typical Navy unit on land. Very good. And very often they'd have marches to keep us fit up and down the village street. And then, of course, we would show the French villagers of how the English really did foot drill on the road, and we really, as we thought, we showed them. But the queer thing with the French villages was that no men at all women, widows, all married women, but no men at all, and no young girls either. And if there was any thought of immorality in men's mind, once you had a good look at them and compared those with the girls we left at home, there was simply no attraction at all. So there was no fear on that score at all. But that was remarkable, the absence of the Frenchmen in the villages. And you'd see an old farmer, 60, with his wife, 40 probably, ploughing, one ox and one mule, pulling this plough along to us. Most crude. That's the way they farmed in wartime. But to say they were attracted to us is no, they weren't a bit. But we found the great man in all the French villages was the Roman Catholic priest, and that's touching on religion, which is a very touchy subject. But he kept everybody in the village on a sort of a tight rein. He seemed to know everything, did the village padre. And as we were Protestants, he never spoke to us at all. No connection with him at all. Although he was a priest of God, he ignored us entirely because we were not Catholics. But his church was rather odd now I think of it. There were four huge holes from the foot of the tower to the top of the tower. 1, 2, 3, 4, absolutely vertical. And that was holes made by the Royal Horse Artillery in 1914-15, when the war was fluid, and the Germans had observers on this, in this clock tower, or this church tower rather, and they simply put four rounds, started at the bottom to drive them to the top, halfway up two more holes, and finish up with a complete hole right up near the steeple. Of course, we all knew the church then by the hole, but he still held services in it because the roof was intact. But the poor old church had these four great gaping shell holes in it. But the padre, he was certainly master of his flock. And we never saw much of him at all. In fact, we only had one religious service, a squadron ever. The commanding officer had the church service like on board ship. He'd conduct the service, read the service to the assembled squadron. And we sang hymns, we had a bit of music. They were quite moving, quite nice. It was a glimpse of home, sounds of home, in English, in English hymns, English hymnal. And we only had one drum head service, and that was in a stubble field, recently cut corn, where the padre came up from army headquarters. We were attached to the 1st Army, by the way. And the padre came up from the 1st Army to give us a drum head service. And he had his batman with him, and he sat there with his sort of a rough and ready rectum, whatever they do the services on. Because he was open to communion. If you wanted to communicate with them, you could, if you wanted to. And we all stood in a hollow square with the padre there, conducting a few hymns and a few readings from the Bible. And I saw this thing, among many others. We saw this Taube. That was one of the early German monoplanes with a curved wing, called a Taube, T-A-U-B-E, called a Taube. We saw this Taube in the distance, and we knew it was a German, because the puffs of smoke behind it were white. And if it was one of ours and the Germans were firing, they'd be black. So we could always tell which plane it was, which side it belonged to, by the black puffs or the white puffs. And this one was followed by high-explosive white puffs coming slowly towards us. And then we could hear the engine going, and we were trying to tune our ear to which one it was of the whether it was Mercedes or whichever one it was, the German engine was fitted to this wretched thing. And he obviously saw us in our formation on this harvest field, because he turned a little bit towards us and came to have a second look at us on the ground, because we were a little bit different to the soldiers. And then the old man saw this, the CO. He suddenly saw this coming towards us and blew his whistle, which meant dispersal. And this man who was conducting the service, this is no disrespect to the padre, please, this man who was reading the service, he picked up his skirts under his arms and ran for the nearest hedge and ditch. And I would say, with the way he ran, he was a varsity champ sprinter. He led the lot. He was there before, and we couldn't run for laughing. To see a padre with his skirts ballooning out up round his waist, and he had sort of gaiters on as well, to me it was highly comical. And that was how our drumhead service was broken up by this wretched thing half a mile away. By then, of course, there was nowhere, no danger really, but the old man thought, well, I'll be safe, I'll blow dispersal, which he did. And that was our comic one and only church service we ever had, because the CO took them every Sunday morning. Yes.
What rank was the CO?
Commander. And he was a brother of Bingham Vimy, Field Marshal. His brother was Army, and he was Commander RN. I forget, I think their family name is Stafford, is it? I don't know what their family, but he was the brother to the Bingham Vimy, the famous Field Marshal, Commander of the Canadians. And man with a beard, experienced commander, he knew his navy inside out. But of course, transporting ship life to shore life wasn't easy to any of the Marines. Even to us it was easy, because we knew no other life. We were civilians, more or less dressed up as airmen. But he was brother to the famous Field Marshal. Very nice man, didn't live long after the war, soon died. One of those things. But to have him standing there reading extracts from the ship's service, you know, the ship's that lay down in the ship's service in the Bible, and some psalms, perhaps. If you could imagine you were at sea, very moving, you know. But we were on the land. But however, it was very nice. We liked it, yes. And we had to, of course, dosh up for that. Dubbing on the boots. And we had issue oil from the RFC, which was more or less castor oil, whitish looking stuff, and we used to use that as dubbing until we had an army order forbidding us to use it. It was too precious to put on boots, but it kept the water out, so we used to use this, so it was forbidden. But if ever you used any, you so contrived it that some drips from the funnel dropped onto the boots. Was that fair? I suppose. And it was very, very efficient waterproofing for ordinary army boots. Very good.
What was your particular job in the unit?
I was appointed the driver to the winch, which was a French one, a Delahaye, French Delahaye, complete unit in itself. The English ones were clumsy, very heavy, and that consisted of a Scammel lorry with a winch unit just planted into the body of the lorry proper, an ordinary winch unit, but its mobility was controlled by the lorry it stood in. But with mine, I could change gear from drive to the wheel, to the vehicle drive wheels, or drive to the drum at the rear, which controlled the flight of the balloon in height, etc. So it was a complete unit. It was mobile, and at the same time you could switch from one to the other by moving a gear lever. And the great art, of course, was giving the men inside a smooth ride. It could be a very gusty ride at times, if the wind suddenly sprang up and you had to pull this thing down, especially in the threat of a thunderstorm. I had to pull them down rather quickly, in case of the attraction of the steel cable, etc., might lead to danger. But the winch was well earthed with a great copper rod, which used to be rammed down between the wheels and to ensure earth. And the thing was to get them up there at a certain height and lower them down as smoothly as possible, controlled, of course, by the people in the basket who could speak to you. If you picked up the phone, you could speak to them direct. But also, the people in the battery could also hear you, so chatting between the crew and the artillery spotters in the basket was almost forbidden. It wasn't forbidden, but it was almost, because you might interrupt some vital message which they were trying to send back to the battery, engaged in some shoot they were indulging in. But that was one of the jobs of the mechanic there, who was to ensure the telephone was ready, and the core of the phone, of course, was in woven in with the plough steel cable. It was inside, safe, and so they could ring down and speak quite clearly through the cable, which kept them up in the suspended their balloon in the air. And the last job for the man who was a mechanic was to guide the, when you were winding down, was to guide the cable into correct coils rather than have a twist or a kink.